The AIBP ASEAN B2B Growth Podcast is a series of fireside chats with business leaders in Southeast Asia focused on growth in the region. Topics discussed include business strategy, sales and marketing, enterprise technology, and innovation.
Hello, and welcome to the ASEAN B2B Growth Podcast, where we sit down with individuals responsible for driving growth within their organizations here in Southeast Asia. My name is YY, and I'll be your host today. Today, we have somebody very interesting joining us, somebody with a very vast background of experiences. And right now, he is heading Aburti's data innovation. And I'll leave him to give you a little bit more insights into some of the work he has done previously and also some of the initiatives he's driving right now. David, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners, please?
Well, hi, and first and foremost, thank you very much for inviting me to this YY. It's always an absolute pleasure. Hello, everyone. My name is David Hardoon. Wow, giving a bit of an introduction. So I always like to start off by saying, you know, I'm a data geek. I came from the origin of doing a research, actually, in the world of artificial intelligence, or as it was then called, neural computational information systems, something unfortunately overly long and
quite a mouthful.
It is. But it just kind of emphasizes my passion and love to data. And over the years, kind of managed to do kind of a round tour of the different perspectives of it, from software, services, in-house, working with the regulator, and now working with the Aboitiz conglomerate across a few of the outfits in really, and I know this sounds like a catchphrase, but I promise you it's not. It is how to operationalize data. It's how to result in the business value. Because, you know, like I said, I came from the world of research. So I've seen it from the academic perspective. And I've kind of fallen in love and became obsessed, in lack of a better word, of, okay, how do we really use it? How do we translate this into something materially quantifiable that everyone can benefit from? So that's me in a kind of way.
You've talked a bit about how you've worked with the different parties from a research background into working with regulators and now driving the innovation within Aburti's group itself. Tell us a little bit more about Aburti's data innovation, how it came about, and a little bit more about Aburti's as a group itself, how they are transforming themselves in the new century ahead.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So maybe let me start off with the Aboitiz as a group. And it's a over 100-year-old conglomerate, kind of, you know, origin of Spain, Catalan, within the hemp business, and essentially had, in fact, over the century transformed itself repeatedly, becoming an organization that covers from power, generation and distribution, financial services, pretty much the entire gamut from payments remittances to full banking licenses, rural banks, construction, cement, airports, integrated estates, food. I can keep on going. It is very diverse in terms of really the businesses that drive a community, drive underlying pillars of effectively of society. Now, interestingly enough, that was a bit of the motivation behind the Aburti's data innovation. It didn't start off as that. It really started off of, we're accumulating more and more and more digital information, digital asset, because of this need to digitalize. And in fact, this was very much led with the financial institution, Union Bank of the Philippines. But the question results is, what do we do with it? How do we leverage it? How do we maximize on these new things that we're creating? And that's where we focused on. That's where we kind of really sharpened our skill sets and capabilities. And having been fairly okay, in fact, if I should say so, in fact, good in that pursuit, we kind of realized, well, why just focus on the financial services when you're dealing with an ecosystem? And that's the beauty and the power of a conglomerate, in that it is an underlying ecosystem. How we're able to drive that similar type of value and benefit in the power industry, whether it is in terms of predictive asset maintenance, fleet management. Heck, I was just talking to someone the other day in terms of vegetation management, which in fact is very, very important in terms of power lines. We don't want those things to come down, even to the cement applications, and how to catalyze essentially that ecosystem capability through combining data. And that's one of the pieces of the also the Aboitiz transformation as kind of now more referred to as, rather than a conglomerate, a tech conglomerate. Of how do you bring together the individual pieces, the individual verticals, to find that premium, that additional value, additional possibility that you may have not been able to unlock before? That's kind of been the rationale and the process. And I always like to, well, it's not joking, it's actually very true, say that ADI, Aboitiz Data Innovation, is a COVID baby. It was conceived and brought to life during COVID. And in a way, I actually think that was a good thing, because it really demonstrated that despite the difficulties of, you know, remote working, no travel, you know, dealing with various challenges that the COVID kind of bestowed upon us, we were able to see the possibility, unlock the possibility, create a new venture, and bring it to kind of this stage of what it is. And it's still within the early stages of journey in terms of the potential.
Yes, we were there when the ADI was launched in Singapore. I've got to say, from being the Group Data and Innovation Officer of Aboitiz Group to launching the new venture, really putting data at its core and launching Aboitiz Data Innovation, that must have been quite a journey. Were there any challenges? Because most of the other subsidiaries or units under Aboitiz Group are well established. So how was it like to create your new venture within such a big conglomerate? And how was it like to, like you said, to nurture, gestate, and bring to birth a new organization during the COVID period?
Well, I have to start off by saying we were very, very fortunate. And it is because of the existing established organizations that we were able to do it. So I would actually arguably say fluidly. In fact, it was thanks to the big brothers and sisters. And the rationale and the intention at the very inception, when we kind of said, look, we need to do this more broadly, was for the other BUs. It was for other businesses. It's how do we drive power and look at it from the lens of data, not from the lens of power, because that expertise, that capability exists. Similarly with banking, how do we start cross-pollinate possibilities, because we built a use case or an application for agriculture, but now we're seeing an application in finance or in airports, you know, like completely like cross-wiring type of scenarios. And it was this kind of embracement by the existing established businesses of, yeah, that's exciting. And now that we have someone who's willing to take on the quote unquote, the risk or the opportunity to bring it forwards in partnership with these existing businesses, it's what kind of, you see, it kind of all fell together. It kind of all made sense in terms of, okay, we have a central competency. And the reason why we do that is, I mean, let's call a spade, you know, data science, AI, these type of expertise, these type of capabilities are still difficult to come by, especially with a sense of maturity in its application. And remember, the focus of ADI is the application. So rather than going and building up large presences in each BU, we still are building the competency. We're still building the capabilities. To me, it's to proliferate as much as possible. But concurrently to that, having that center competency in conjunction to drive those application and use cases. So it was hand in hand. It was truly, truly hand in hand. And I guess a bit of my personal view and belief is, you know, never say no, but constantly looking for that new possibility, that next venture that resulted in that, you know, continuous and is the continuous growth effectively of ADI.
I love that. I think you've talked about how the brothers and sisters in Aboitiz Group kind of nurtured you. And one of the things that you've mentioned about, like, it's not about looking for more data sources. Data is already there. I think one of the key problems that people or the organizations that we speak with in the region is, it's not like they have not enough data, but rather how do they use the data to derive the right insights that can actually drive decisions, right? Tell us a bit more about when you went on this journey to help your brothers and sisters within the group, what did they have to do, or what kind of base layer was already there, and what do you do to transform that into data-driven insight?
No, so you've hit the nails, actually, not just the one nail, nails on the head, that first and foremost, you know, no data, no insight. So let's start with that. The second one, and I've been told many a times by many organizations, like, oh, David, we don't have any data. I can strongly tell you that that is a misconception. I have yet to meet an organization that doesn't have data. It may not be in a form that's readily accessible. It may not be as entirely tidy or clean as one would want, but everyone has data. So start with what you have. What we did, and one of the very, very first things that we've kind of sunk our teeth in realizing the importance to capitalize on the existing data that's available and prolificating the ability to, in a governed, secure manner, access that data, we put in place what we call, it's a data exchange platform, or we call it Parlay. And it is a bit of a play of words, not just because I'm a fan of Pirates of the Caribbean, where we said, look, again, let's call a spade. Data sharing, data access has always been a very difficult, challenging topic for the right reasons, you know, privacy, governance, info security, et cetera, and so forth. So how do we do it, but not repeating the same, you know, what's the definition from Einstein? Doing the same thing over and over and over is the definition of insanity. How do we do it differently? And I've said, well, actually, as data analysts, as data scientists, ironically, I don't want your data. What I want is the ability of deriving that information and building those capabilities on top of it. So the platform we built does exactly that. It doesn't share data. It doesn't take your data, YY, and give it to me, David. All it does, it says, well, here's an ability to access your data, YY, where you retain full ownership, full custodianship, full control on your data. Now, that is a very important element, because now that also elicited trust, which is quite interesting, because the premise of a platform is a zero trust environment. This means you don't need to trust me because you control it. That was the foundation. That was the starting point. And if I may give you a slightly elongated answer, but I give you like a funny analogy that I always used to use in the beginning, when we were motivating and proliferating the ideas, when you go to a museum and you sit in front of the Mona Lisa, or Van Gogh, or any other artist of your preference, when you leave the museum, you leave with inspiration. You don't leave with a piece of art. That's the idea. I don't need the data. What I need is the outcome. I need the ideation. I need the insight. I need the possibility that comes from that motivation of that data. And that's exactly what we aimed, succeeded to unlock using that capability, and therefore the building of the applications from it.
I love how you have shared the fact that it's not the data, but the outcome, the inspiration or the insight to get from the data itself. One of the common problems that we see, and conglomerates are quite common in the Southeast Asian context, where many large organizations will have little babies or brothers and sisters under them. But sometimes it's really hard to get the brothers and sisters to share information. And truly, that's where the biggest insights lie, in cross-referencing the correct data points in order to drive even deeper and richer meanings into the insights itself. Can you walk us through how you did that within the organization? Just example of how perhaps with the different groups work together, and something that was very interesting, unexpected, came out of it.
You know, I'm smiling from cheek to cheek, because as you're talking, I can't help but not think of my five kids and how getting kids to share sometimes is extremely difficult. But the goal and the objective, look, in the end of the day, is demonstrating, and I will get to the conglomerate dimension of it, which has an additional edge, but pre-conglomerate, it's really important in showing the mutualization, the joint value that comes up. And a lot of times, like I said, the initial stage that, in my view, kind of had prevented our even exploration of, is there a value to us, is because of those. And again, I'm not undermining them. Genuine concerns, info security, privacy. the fiduciary responsibility. I mean, no one wants to get into trouble and no one wants to do the wrong thing. So I kind of like, look, no, we're not going to go down that path. But if you move that away and move that away, not in terms of reducing the governance or the controls, but saying you control it. So if for whatever reason you don't like me anymore and you think there's an issue, you click a switch in a very literal sense and boom, all access is gone. There is no residual with me, which is the issue and challenge with today's mechanism of data sharing. Because when I physically give you a copy of the data, no matter what you've signed or I've signed, you acting on it is an act of, well, let's call a spade again, a faith. So the moment that's removed, suddenly there's an opportunity like, oh, okay, so let's explore. And that exploration and the showing, the demonstration that, hey, there is a mutual value. Maybe on this set, I benefit. But maybe on that set, you benefit. Maybe on this other third set, we both benefit. Suddenly creates that impetus of, hey, you know something? This can work. Let's keep on exploring. So that's on the premise, and that's how you do it. You demonstrate it. The best thing is seeing is believing, as the saying goes. And you start small. You start with believers. You start with people saying, look, David, I'm willing to take the risk. You demonstrate that value. And the moment you demonstrate it, even the people who are either on the fence on the other side will go like, okay, I want some of that. And in the case of a conglomerate or any ecosystem environment, I mean, it's the shared value. And it's the Amazon, hypothesis of, I can have a business that's losing money, but it is generating substantially more than it's losing on the other side of the aisle kind of scenario. Again, extreme example, but it's an existing hypothesis. All of this cannot be achieved if you simply guard your data with some zealousness. It's not going to happen. We need to breathe in, open up the arms and saying, okay, I don't need to trust you because I have environments that do not require the degree of trust. And guess what happens? You will then learn to trust. You will then find that formula of cooperation.
Going back to the parenting example, sometimes over-parenting is bad, right? You need to have some space in order to let the children find their own way and derive their own personality. And I think do you have any examples you could share with the listeners of how this has happened within your role?
No, absolutely. And I'm usually when I'm asked about this, the first one that comes to mind that I always love to talk about is the cement scenario, because it was just really just unexpected in any form whatsoever. But let me perhaps leave it to a secondary, and I'll start with another more traditional element. It allowed us to suddenly, and I'll start with the cross proliferation of data, predominantly within the financial sector. Now, Philippines, the goal is, the objective, and again, profit isn't a dirty word. The goal, you have to be sustainable. You need to essentially grow as a corporation. But concurrently, how do you drive financial resilience? How do you drive the ability to bring those who are unbanked or underbanked and those services? And the reality is, the reason why they're unbanked or underserved is because the expectation of the traditional financial services cannot be met. And they can't be met because you don't have a credit history, you don't have a bank account, you don't have the usual things that ticks that compliance box effectively. Now, how can that be addressed? Well, alternative data. You look for other forms of information that allow me, let's say, if I wear my banking hat, to estimate what is the lendability, how much I can give you, and also what's the risk. Because again, that comes from the and that's why I use the word financial resilience and sustainability rather than just inclusion. Because if I lend you more than you can handle, that is just it's not allowed for sustainable growth at a level. Now, why I'm telling you all of this, because, well, guess what? When you go buy your agriculture goods, when you go consume power, that's all data points. That's all information. So when you come to me and say, well, David, I'm really sorry. I'm running a mom and pop shop. I don't have a bank account because I deal with cash in hand. So I could not provide that evidence of my operations. And I'll go, wait, okay, but why? Do you have a power account? Well, yes, I do. Would you mind me using that information to essentially estimate your credit score? Well, if that gives me a loan, go ahead. Guess what? I can do that. That's exactly one example. And this is exactly what we've been doing in terms of looking within our own ecosystem, amongst outside the ecosystem for that kind of data. So that's one very, very critical example. And we've been rolling this out. We've been lending on the back. This is with, again, our sister company, UBX, or the CCAP platform for MSMEs, small, medium enterprises. One example. Another example whereby now being able to access data in a secure manner, like I said, I was alluding to the cement. One of the basically the key issues with cement is quality. We were able to use the data that's available. I want to emphasize that point, available already from the machinery, the equipment, from the IoT, to effectively be able to provide information to the chemical engineers in advance of what's going to be the quality of that mixture. Because effectively, cement is like baking bread. And you want to get the right size, the right texture, the right firm. Same thing. So we're able to tell those guys and engineers, well, this is what's going to be. Now, it sounds like all great and nice, but what it results in, you don't have to trial all these different baking scenarios. You don't have to experiment. 50% reduction in energy consumption, 35 kilotons of CO2 emission reduction. The possibility in endless. And then perhaps last one I'll mention, which is also close to heart, I guess, and from a Singapore dimension, is vegetation management. This is power. Now, when you're dealing with, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of kilometers of power lines, you need to know where do you go, where do you manage, where do you maintain first. Using the data that's coming from the grid, using external data information, we're able to build these kind of solutions and now push it, allow end users to consume it as appropriate. So these are just some of the examples that are now possible, leveraging on that data the moment that layer of access has been unlocked. Not as an experiment, some are experiments, don't get me wrong, but not as an experiment, with the goal of using and generating that end value to internal or external customers.
That sounds very good. I love the example about the cement. You know, you say that you've used existing data and you were able to predict instead of them having to bake hundreds of different samples and then send it to the client and then get it sent back when it doesn't fulfill the criteria itself.
And however, not to interrupt you there, I just want to kind of just share very, very briefly. So that thing now has seeded the possibility for effectively this roadmap of application and AIs in the world of cement. I would argue, again, right or wrong, that prior to that application, prior to that unlocking layer of data, if you would go to anyone in the cement industry and saying like, oh, I can build you a whole roadmap of AI for cement, they'll be like, you know, we've been doing this for centuries. Like, what's the applicability of AI in cement, really? In the end of the day, how does it move the needle? And that goes back to your question early on of how do you get that next step? It's by demonstrating. It's by showing the feasibility, showing the value. And not to interrupt you there, I just want to kind of just share very, very briefly. So that thing now has seeded the possibility for effectively this roadmap of application and AIs in the world of cement. I would argue, again, right or wrong, that prior to that application, prior to that unlocking layer of data, if you would go to anyone in the cement industry and saying like, oh, I can build you a whole roadmap of AI for cement, they'll be like, you know, we've been doing this for centuries. Like, what's the applicability of AI in cement, really? In the end of the day, how does it move the needle? And that goes back to your question early on of how do you get that next step? It's by demonstrating. It's by showing the feasibility, showing the value, and then going to that next step effectively.
I like that very much. Actually, you have brought me to the next question. And I was going to say, when you first came to the product engineers with this idea, before you could demonstrate anything, how do you get them to try this out?
It's not a case of like, we build this, you know, marvelous eight ball type of scenario, and then go to the engineers like, here you go, just rub it and give you the answer. It's very much a hand-in-hand operation from the very onset. And a good example, and by the way, a highly recommended book, which I thoroughly enjoyed, Loon Shots, where it kind of illustrates all these applications that has fundamentally changed the world around us, which were completely ignored, like radar. And one of the reasons, you know, radar wasn't successful, even when they implemented it on planes, is because the design just wasn't in a way that the pilots could use in a very effective manner. What I'm getting at is, it's not just about the idea. It's not just about the scientific proneness. It's about how to assure it is usable, and usable in a manner that brings us to that next step of progress. That's why, from the very onset, in this case of cement, the engineers were involved. Like, what is it that you need to know? How would it help you in your day-to-day? How would the information be presented? How would you be confident that it's validated, etc.? Million one questions, which some allude to the world of data, some a process, some not even any of that, such that when we do result in that end prototype of product, it is already as aligned as possible to, okay, this, I can use this. This can help me in my day-to-day. And that's exactly the goal and the objective, to help the people on the ground on their day-to-day.
So if we take a step back and we look at what companies need to do now in order to make sure that data strategy is, prepared for the future, because now there are just more and more data sources. Some of them may not have solved the whole data governance, data cleanliness, the basic level. But what do you suggest for them to do to make sure that they're still relevant in the next, you know, the whole new data changes, AI, machine learning, and all of that coming into play?
I'll start off by saying, it's not a question of if, it's a question of must. No matter what industry you're in, and if recent progress in technology, digitalization, and AI haven't been an awakening, well, then, you know, enjoy the beach kind of scenario. But it's a must. Every industry will be, you know, and obviously I'm biased, so I say this with a smile on my face, will be disrupted in terms of what can it achieve, the degrees of productivity it can attain, new services. So let's start with that premise. It's a must. You need to do it. But then the million-dollar question is, well, okay, but how? So allow me to quote my mother. Don't boil the ocean to make a cup of tea. It's extremely important to start in a step-by-step approach and a compartmentalized approach. Whether you start with the data governance, whether you start with the data, whether you start with the use case, whether you start with training, you know something? Each to their own. Just start. A lot of times I see organizations that spend so much time trying to figure out where to start and how to start, they just don't start. The honest reality is that you will always start, well, I won't say wrong, but not entirely right. There will always be those learnings, but that's exactly the whole, in my bad French, raison d'être of data. It's exactly that. It's to learn. It's you start and then you figure out and tweak along the way. And that's why I'm saying just start, keep it compartmentalized, keep it small, adjust very quickly. I would, however, recommend to start with the use case. Why would I recommend to start with the use case? And when I say use case, I don't mean, oh, how do we use AI or how do we use data? That is arguably the wrong use case. That's the wrong question. The question is, depending on your business, but let me just surmise it as, how do I get more profit? How do I meet my 20% target? How do I improve operations? How do I reduce complaints? You know, whatever it may be. That's the question. It may be that there's no need for AI for it, not an issue. You're still meeting your goal. I would believe strongly that you'll find multiple applications of data and AI in that underlying process. Because what you want to make sure is that you're focusing on a problem or an opportunity and finding a solution, not looking at solution and looking for a problem, which is a lot of times what we do. And again, for good reason, there's a lot of, you know, cool gadgets and funky stuff out there, and we want to play around with it. But basics, get the basics right, get the basics working. And the moment they're working, the moment you see like, oh, Are you telling me that we've just achieved 300% improvement in our revenue targets because we've applied this? How? Because of this, X, Y, and Z. Now you have that the mind share, the collateral to go do that experimentation whereby you have a really cool tool and you're not quite sure how to apply. But you have to start with the basics. So that's my recommendation. One, realize it's not a question of, it's not applicable to us. You have to. Whether it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or even 50 years from now, I would argue that an organization that doesn't do it will be replaced. Look at Nokia, look at BlackBerry, et cetera, et cetera. Look at Blockbuster. It will. Not to be a doomsday seer, but it will. Secondly, don't boil the ocean. Just start. Recommendation, use case, based on business objective, start with the basis before going and creating, you know, innovation and research and all that, unless you're an innovation research company, in which case that is your basics.
Those are very, very good advice for enterprises who are still perhaps on the drawing board. It's not so much about the plan, but really starting and adjusting the plan along the way. You know, at the start, we spoke a little bit about zero trust, how Parlay as a platform allows the organization to create this zero trust environment where you can turn on and off like the switch in order to access the data. But beyond that, what do you see as challenges that, you know, enterprises need to take note of when they're beginning on this data journey? So they found like the problem they want to solve. And then as they go about this, what do they need to look out for?
Well, I always get a bit worried of saying this because I don't want to...
sound like a doomsday person.
Yeah, no, doomsday, but I don't want to scare anyone off. But look, again, I want to call it out and be very transparent, is change management. You see what I mean? A lot of times, you know, people just hear the word change management. It's like, oh, thank you. No, we'd rather not go down that path. But the reason I bring up the word change management is, okay, let's take a step back. What is data? Data is a representation of your process. You know, when you, let's take a call center and you receive a call, the amount of time the person is waiting for the response, literally the, you know, that pathway of, oh, click five, click two, to then until someone responds, the time it takes for you to resolve the issue in itself, everything I've just described, that's data. When you go sell something to a customer, that's data. Data is a true reflection. And again, put aside to how well you capture it, but data is a reflection of what you do. So therefore, when you build these solutions on top of data, you will be getting a sight into activities, into actions, into what works and what doesn't work. You know, the emperor's new clothes, you can't hide. That's my point. And that is something that needs to be done delicately or gingerly, whichever is the right term, because sometimes things happen that you don't know of. You truly and honestly are not aware of it until you look at the data and go like, oh, wait, so we've been doing this? And you don't want people to go like, no, I don't want people to know what's actually happening. It's the realization of like, no, we need to constantly learn. We need to constantly uncover what's happening in order to continuously improve. And think of it almost as like this status quo amnesty of, you know, however good we were in the past, that's the past. We now have a better way of doing it. We have another better way. We're constantly taking these stepping stones. That's number one. Number two, why I said change management is, even take the cement example that I've mentioned. Even if its incorporation in a process is relatively minuscule, it's a new step in the process. And in order to make sure that it's most effectively used and most proficiently used, how best do you incorporate in a process? That's not a data question. That's not a data science question. That's not even a technology question. That's a change management. That's a process question. So I'm just saying that at the end of the day, if an organization truly wants to be a pioneer leader in terms of adopting digitalization and adopting the application that comes from data, is a realization that at some point in time, there will need to be a much more active proneness type of activity in terms of how do we constantly, again, when I say constantly, take it in a pragmatic and a contextual term, review our processes, improve on our processes, adapt to them as we're going for that next 10%, as we're going for the next 15%, as we are understanding on how to do operations better. So if I come to you and I say to you, why, you can improve 50% of your operational operations and reduce 50% of your costs. You need to change this. And you go like, oh yeah, but I don't want to change that. It was like, well, you can achieve, you know, 50% efficiency. So there needs to be that kind of overall engagement and process. So I can't emphasize that enough. It's people, it's never technology.
So change management and managing the mindsets of people, right? Well, let's look into yourself as a leader. When you are trying to drive change management, trying to look at transparency and how data can bring about the actual results of it, right? You need to build a team which is aligned in your vision in driving this within the organization and with external parties. ADI has grown tremendously in the last, I would say, 1 year or so as you build up your team. What are the qualities that you look out for in the leaders that you choose to nurture in their own data journey or data advocacy?
That's a very good question. And it's a tough question. It's a good and a tough question. And the reason I say that is because, you know, sometimes also people say, oh, David, what's the JD? And I'm like, oh, crikey, I can only tell you the vision. It's like, how do you translate that to a JD? I'm not entirely sure. So what I mean by that, and since your question is kind of really looking at the leaders, the people who'll drive it, is first and foremost, I don't know if it's the right thing to say, but tenacity. Why do I say tenacity? It's because it is very difficult driving the data agenda. It's not a case of, you know, it's not a Kevin Costner movie of, you know, build it and they will come. No, you need to build it and explain it and, you know, market it and explain it again and convince. Even if it's something that has value, it's not obvious at times. And like I said, it you need to show, demonstrate, and advocate why this is something that should be explored, tested, experiment. So that's really tenacity of not giving up with, you know, slightest or slightly sometimes more than slightest resistance or concerns. Again, you're dealing with traditional functions, compliance, risk, who will usually tell you, no, you can't do something. How do you approach that and say, well, okay, how do we look at it slightly differently? And how do we attain the same degree of, what's the word I'm looking for? Security, compliance, governance, but meeting these underlying objectives. So tenacity, attitude, aptitude are absolutely critical to me in this kind of world of leadership of data science. And then finally is, and I know it's a bit of a weird one because you don't really put data scientists and communicators in the same bucket, but communication. Through my career, I have seen, again, because I've had the privilege of sitting on the geek side of the aisle. So even when you present a really in-depth, well, mathematical solution, I still hopefully have the ability to appreciate it. I've seen wonderful solutions. I mean, really revolutionary solutions that were never implemented because they were not communicated properly. It is the most important thing that when you communicate a technical solution, you communicate it in a business language, because otherwise there is a disconnect. So just to recap, it's not about, you know, coding skills. It's not about whether you can do Python or this. On the leadership element, in achieving those objectives of not boiling the ocean, you know, back to basis, focusing on the business objectives rather than doing AI for AI's sake, is tenacity, aptitude, attitude, and communication or storytelling or whatever you want to call it, because it's important to demonstrate the feasibility and possibility so that someone goes, that you come say, you know what, David, let's try it out. That is the most important thing. Because if you don't get people saying, let's try it out, all that downstream stuff of, you know, change management process, I mean, forget it. if you don't start with that right attitude of let's try it, let's see the possibility. And if it doesn't work, okay, you know what? It doesn't work. This is the world of learning. We fail fast or we try fast. But guess what? If you come to me and say, you know what, let's try, and I show you that 20% improvement or 10% improvement, you go, yeah, I want that. Okay, how do we make sure it works? And then it can lead to those subsequent conversations. That's the most critical. But don't get me wrong. Of course, further layers, you need to have the engineers, the MLOps, you know, the people who build. You need that, of course. But you need to drive the message. You need to integrate it into a business.
I think more than communication, you're looking for people with the ability to persuade and to be able to bring about an outcome, because you're talking about outcome-driven data-driven outcomes, right? So yeah. I believe that...
I was trying not to use the word persuade, but yes.
But I've seen the team and they are all great in the art of communication. Well, when you're embarking on this journey, I'm sure there are partners that come along with you that you trust to be on this entire journey end to end. Can you share with us maybe some of the closest partners that you work with and what caused you to look to them for a partnership in really delivering this vision of data?
So when you think of partners... So when you think of partners, and first and foremost, it's critically important. My prior role, I was, you know, with the regulator, Monetary Authority of Singapore. So I kind of had a purview over the financial services, and that was really the kind of the boom of the fintechs and so forth. And the reason I bring this up is because a lot of times the approach is like, oh, I have this solution that solves all your problems. Yeah, but it's a point solution. Whether it's, you know, predicting in financial crimes, or whether it is in asset maintenance, or whether it's in cement, or whether it's in food, it's a point solution. It's not an end-to-end. It needs to be integrated. It needs to sit in an environment. It needs to be consumed by applications. There may be, as we discussed earlier, change management. So in order to truly deliver a solution, you need to look at it from a point one to point N as much as possible. And that's something... unless you are a significantly large corporation that has all of that, it's something that I personally believe, we believe, is done through and with partners effectively, such that the messaging and whether or not the end user needs it all is separate, but the messaging is complete, as complete as possible. So partnerships is critical. That's number one. Number two, and kind of alluding to your question of, I want to also emphasize that it's not just external partners. You know, again, it could be from your cloud computing, such as AWS. We work quite proliferately with them. Parlay is built with a partner of ours, which is the underlying technology called Harbor, et cetera, and so forth. But it's also internal partners. And I want to emphasize the internal partners because at times it gets, you know, forgotten from your IT operators, from the business, finance. Very important internal partner, such that these things can be seen and assured that there's an appropriate and a right fit. Very, very, very critical. And again, I want to emphasize this because data, or the solution of data, when you think of data science and AI, with all its beauty and its sophistication, is still a point solution. There's a pre and there's a post.
Well, if we look into the future, peer into that eight ball that you have, right? What do you see in the future of data? How would data evolve in the next, say, 5 to 10 years? And some of the new opportunities that excite you?
Wow. Okay. That to me is not just a difficult question. I'm truly mean it when I say this. I think it's an impossible question. And I'll tell you why I think it's an impossible question. The rate in which our technological advancements are progressing in terms of showing what can be done with data. I mean, we're seeing today things that we couldn't imagine a few months ago, let alone last year. I can tell you right now that we're going to be seeing advancements next year, the year after that. Same thing. We can speculate as much as we want. It's just going to blow our mind. 10 years from now, forget it. I'm not even going to bother. It's just going to bring its type of situation. But with that, I am enthralled. I am excited. And the messaging to me is you can't wait. you can't. It's and in fact, if anything, and I know I kind of I get into trouble about this sometimes. It's like even when people say like, oh, what's the we need to build a 5-year strategy before we commence. No, you know, like literally no. By the time you're done with that 5-year strategy, the other organization, again, that just started and got things going will already be 5 years ahead of you, even though you have that 5-year strategy. Use the data. The more you use the data, the more you realize the possibilities of what can be achieved, whether it is from interfaces and chat type of creation, productivity enhancement, and we're already seeing from the various applications of natural language programming and processing and so forth, how that can help us in productivity, from preparing questions for an interview to doing a summary to an itinerary. And that's just casual stuff. It can go into more complex. And imagine if you'd had that same capability with an expert domain of, you know, review this design to identify potential faults. I got asked by one of the boards at one point saying, like, David, what does this mean to us? My answer was almost like instantaneous when I said the meaning is every single one of us, every single one of people that I employ will have the productivity of potentially 10 people. Can you imagine what we can achieve if even an organization of 5 people, 10 people now has a productivity of 100 when you're spending the same amount of time so that you don't have to, you know, burn the midnight oil? So imagine that you actually have a reasonable working day. You have time off, but you have the productivity of 10 people. Wow. I really mean it whereby I can't wait. I cannot wait. We are looking at a fundamental change of what we're able to achieve, how we interact with the services and the possibilities. I mean, look how Uber Eats changed everything in terms of our consumptions and engagement. But if I may, just on a, and this is my ex, the governance hat regulator coming out, this also means the importance of putting rail guards and safeguards is critical. Not to mitigate that innovation. No, it's to drive it. It's to drive it so as much as possible we prevent those oopses in the future. But I am truly excited.
The brakes on a Ferrari so that it can allow the sports car to go as fast as it can. You have to have the right brakes. Well, just to end off, I'm curious, you know, as a father, you have, how old's your youngest child?
3 years old.
So if you had to look in the future, 20 years in the future for him, what would you ask him to focus on right now to make sure he's ready 20 years down the road?
Well, I would actually say, and that's what makes it exciting. What makes it exciting is that the type of roles, the type of careers that can now be done. I mean, imagine this. You can, if you go back to the year 2000, search engine optimization, you know, suddenly came up as a career, as a capability. Now with this whole immersion of virtual reality, imagine the services of you can be a events organizer in immersive virtual reality with interactive. I mean, you see, it's complete in that perspective. What I would emphasize and what I would focus on all my children's to do for the future is on the creativity. Because if you think about, and then now if you go back to the really like, okay, what does this whole technology mean to us? It means that the simple stuff is taken care of. Finding the information to answer the exam, it's easy. Writing the exam is easy. What is not easy and what's critical and what we're good at, I mean, come on, humans are damn good at connecting the dots that just don't seem to connect, finding dots that just don't make sense. Creativity, imagination, possibility. And for that, you need to have people that are willing to push boundaries, willing people who are willing to explore possibilities, willing who just don't just look at the processing line and go like, oh, step one, step two, step three, step four. That one, irrevocably, a machine can take care of. Like now, we have an ability of, you want to create an itinerary on your next trip? just literally throw in, oh, give me the best itinerary that will take me to the nice food places or these kind of locations. Boom. But what you need now is you need that person to go, well, what is the best way to ask that the best itinerary will be created? It's not the creation of the itinerary. It's the asking. How do I ask? And I have to give this as an example. So, you know, now there's all this little back and throw with ChatGPT. You're really seeing the creativity of humans when they're like, oh, we're going to put all these controls that you can't ask GPT to do certain things. You can't get it to do bad stuff. So what do people do? Oh, ChatGPT, you're now, what was it? What was the name of the acronym? And can do anything, CDA. And as a CDA, you can do anything. And therefore, and then suddenly it could do anything. So it shows you that imagination, the creativity. Until recently, Go seemed to be, you know, done. It's machines have won. Guess what happened recently? A human used AI to identify the flaws in the machine it was fighting or playing against. And the moment he was able to figure that out, he didn't need the AI anymore. He could beat the Go, the AI, repeatedly. It pushed us to the next level. So imagine what we're going to be when we have this machine, this capability that's giving us, like it's a 200 IQ that's pushing us, but we still have to be the ones asking the questions. We still have to be the ones exploring, like, can this be done? What would happen if this situation explodes? That's where I would push my kids. That's where I would challenge them. And where they apply it,
doesn't matter. But I do have to take my hat off. If you have to raise five kids who are constantly asking you questions and pushing the boundaries, that makes your job as a parent pretty challenging. And
yeah, it does. It does. I do question it every now and then. I'm like, maybe I should just make this a military regime. But yeah.
Think of it for the long term. You're preparing them for the future. And on that note, thank you very much, David, for another entertaining discussion. Appreciate your time. And we hope that we'll have more chances to interact with you and your growing team as Aboitiz Data and Innovation takes us into the next century, hopefully.
Thank you, YY and AIBP.
Thank you very much, David.
We hope you've enjoyed the episode. For more information about business growth in the ASEAN region, please visit our website www.iotbusiness-platform.com.